The first scripture reading comes from the Old Testament, book of Numbers, chapter 20, verses 1 to 2, and then skips to verses 6 to 12. And in your pew Bible, you may find it on page 133. The Israelites, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh. Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and against Aaron. Then Moses and Aaron went away from the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting. They fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and your brother Aaron, and command the rock before their eyes to yield its water. Thus you shall bring water out of the rock for them. Thus you shall provide drink for the congregation and their livestock." So Moses took the staff from before the Lord, as he had commanded him. Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Listen, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their livestock drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust in me to show my holiness before the eyes of the Israelites, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
God's word, Logos, Jesus Christ, his word, the gospel, the good news. Let us hear the gospel, and if you are comfortable standing, I invite you to do so. Matthew teaching from Jesus' teaching, as recounted in Matthew's version, 9:32. After they had gone away, that's the wrong place, 35, thank you. Then Jesus went all about the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and curing every disease and every sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I invite you to be seated. You know, when I came here in 2015, it was kind of a difficult time for all of us. A lot of changes, and there was a disruption of our lives, and you were losing a pastor, and I was losing a place, and I hope we've journeyed together to become a kind of family, and that I hope that we've crossed some of those barriers of trust. But I've discovered something in the last couple of years that I've been here. I've discovered that I've missed something from Johnstown. It's the harvest time right now. I don't see very many huge cornfields and sugar beet fields here in Aurora. I don't see quite as many of them. But it's harvest time there, and that harvest time has special significance in lots of interesting ways. I'm not a farmer, and if some of you have been farmers, you might know some of the terminology, language, and some of the details better than I. If I misspeak, I apologize in advance. I can only tell you what I have observed as a layperson watching these amazing farmers and this community. Farming's an interesting business. It begins with the winter. And the dirt is cold and frost is on the soil, and it's dead and lifeless. And gradually over the course of the winter, spring comes and the farmers begin to turn the soil and caress it and to soften it and fertilize it. Sort of like the pastor in a sermon fertilizing the congregation. We'll use that term instead of manure. But then, and it's an interesting phenomenon, in all the years that I was in the midst of Johnstown, I never remember seeing the major planting going on. They must have snuck out when I wasn't looking, because what was random and open fields are suddenly organized into long rows. There's nothing there, there's just dirt rows, and in some places those are corrugates for irrigating, but in most cases those are the rows, and inside them are seeds that have been planted. As the farmers are preparing, and we begin to watch. And day by day you watch. I'm red-green colorblind, so I don't see it the same way everybody else. But something changes in the way that we see the soil, and it becomes fuzzy on top. And as you get close, you can see that little sprouts are coming up. And initially, you look at those sprouts, and you can't tell corn from sugar beets, from wheat, from barley. But they begin to grow. Now, maybe some of you are botanists, biologists. Can you tell the difference between all those crops? When they get a little bit bigger, I can tell the corn. That's pretty easy, isn't it? But when I first moved to Johnstown, I was in a field about halfway through the summer, and there was these fields that looked like wheat fields to me, but I knew that there was also barley. So I was driving down this gravel road, and there were two farmers stopped there talking. And I stopped and I said, I'm new here. And I said, I need your help. How do you tell the difference between wheat and barley? Which of these fields is which? And the one farmer looked at me and says, this one over here is wheat. He says, this one over here is barley. And I looked at the two of them and I said, how do you know? And he says, because that's what I planted there. I said, well, how do you tell the difference? And the other one started laughing. He said, don't feel bad. He says, it's not easy to tell. He said, you got to really know your plants to know the difference. The best is to know who's farming this field and what they're planting that year. Sugar beets, I can tell. They look a whole lot different. They're a lot lower to the ground and a whole lot different, but that's a major crop in that area. But then they begin to water the crops, and sometimes they irrigate with slotted pipe and other irrigation techniques, but nowadays they use those big circle things. Have you ever been flying up high over the land and you look down and you see those circles everywhere? They're not UFO circles, but they're called circles. They call them pivots. Yeah, I've got the pivot at 34 and 17, one of the fellers will say. Or I've got a three-quarter pivot there. I got a house on the one-quarter of the circle. So if you're going to talk farmer speak, you got to talk about your pivots. And you don't harvest. You might call up on the phone and say, is Keith at home? And Carol would say, oh, Peter, no, Keith's out cutting corn. And I can imagine him standing in a field with his pocket knife carving up a piece of corn. And I said, what? Oh, no, they've got a machine with long arms that goes through the field and corn is cut and harvested and pulled together, and the kernels, it's an amazing process. Big machines. I called up for Steve, and Ellen, his wife, answered and says, is Steve there? No, he's out digging beets. Had a vision of him standing in the field in his boots with a shovel. Oh, no. I got to ride with him while he dug beets one day. This machine, there was a cab, there was room for about four or five, a dinner table. Air conditioned, stereo, computer screen, joysticks to drive the thing. Seat was cushioned, seven different adjustments on the seat. If you're going to spend that many hours from before dawn till after dusk, you get a comfortable seat. I did not see that it had any bathroom fixtures there, but they may not have shown me them. But we're working along and it just works, and as it's going, it just pops the beets up out of the ground, picks them up, shakes the mud off of them, puts them on a belt, and dumps them in the tank. And it goes into the tank. I said, well, the tank's going to fill up. He says, yeah, but you watch. The trucks, there's a line of trucks, a convoy of trucks that get up next to him. And he hits a button, and the tank is emptied into the truck. And the next truck pulls up, and the next truck. And they dig beets like you've never seen. I swear they were doing 16, 18 rows at a time, but maybe not quite that many. And the trucks are kind of interesting, you see. You'd think a truck driver driving truck for harvesting and what have you. You can imagine what truckers look like, don't you? How many of you have seen truckers? Big strapping. The most interesting trucker I saw was Charlene Nelson. She might weigh 100 pounds wet, 80 years old, and she driving the truck and smiling and waving. I said, isn't that hard work? She says, oh no, I always get the newest truck. I have seniority, she said. You can drive a car, you can drive a truck for harvest. One day I was driving along and I pulled up next to this beet truck. Beets everywhere. There was beets along the side of the road that had fallen off, so many beets. And I looked up in the cab to see if I could see who it was. It was Ellen. She's 40-ish. You could maybe see her at her other job working at Macy's in the cosmetics counter. But there she was with one arm hanging out the truck and her puppy dog on her arm. And the puppy dog smiled at me and hung its tongue out. And they waved. One of the guys that regularly does it, it's a retired American Airlines pilot. And that's what you do when it's time to harvest. Everybody gets involved. Everybody. I did not drive truck. They knew better than to ask me, I think. But we need to pause. It's easy in the agricultural communities, settings, to realize the harvest is going on. But sometimes in our urban settings, we go to buy an ear of corn in the store and we forget. We forget the work that's gone into it and the investment that's in it and the farmers that grow it and that feed us. And we need to acknowledge those. We would notice if it was absent, I guarantee you. That's what that passage was about that Debbie read. The Israelites have left Egyptian captivity. There they were in Egypt and they were slaves. Owned. No account to be disposed of or used up as the will of the Pharaoh. And Moses leads them out of captivity. Leads them through the Red Sea where they leave behind Pharaoh's chariots and army. And they go out into the desert and there they are in the desert. And all of a sudden you can't go to King Supers and buy corn. We don't have any water. We're going to starve. It was better to be slaves and sit around the flesh pots in Egypt. And God says, you're quarreling with me and you have no faith. It's dangerous to think that we're in control of all those things. It's dangerous to think that we can just go and handle our prosperity and that all of our prosperity is at our own hand. Farming's a big business now. A lot of science, a lot of computers involved. They'll know the number of square feet and they'll know their tractors are now GPS computer controlled. There'll be times when, in the near future, when the tractors will be doing all the work and nobody will be in the cab. They said they can do that now, but none of the farmers are willing to take a $3 million tractor and send it out by itself. And they said, I'd kind of like to keep my hands on my money. They know the pH of the soil. They know how much water, the water content, the water supply. They know the time of the year and the median temperatures. They knew the seeds and they plant everything. It's all very, very scientific. And they can grow corn as high as an elephant's eye. Isn't that the line from Music Man? Corn is as high as an elephant's eye. That's all I'm going to go. But it's impossible to calculate the hailstorm that comes right before harvest. I've seen it happen. I was there one year. Crops were maybe a week, maybe two from being harvested. The corn, it was maybe two elephant's eyes high. And the corn, it gets so high that there are canyons where the roads are. You can't see the mountains anymore. And that's the name of my sermon, the canyons. And you can look on the front of your bulletin and you know what I'm talking about. Have you ever driven through a canyon of corn? It gets a little claustrophobic and sometimes you wonder, am I still on the right road? I have no landmarks. I can't see anywhere. They know how to grow corn. But they had grown corn, and the clouds came over. And that hail in 5-10 minutes stripped that corn stalks down to nothing. They lost everything. A year's work bringing the corn to fruition is gone. We are not in charge. No, we need to remember that. We need to back up and remember who is in charge and whose we are. And where we are. Sometimes in our churches we think maybe we can do things and make things happen. And
church advisors and church consultants will tell us how to do this, that, and the other. And the reality is, we are not in charge. We are not the ones that will make things grow or not grow. We can plant the seeds. We can nurture everything. But then it is up to God to grow the Spirit. And we need to acknowledge that. But now in Matthew, we hear Jesus' call. The harvest is come. The harvest is plentiful. There is crops galore. I look around at our world and I believe we're finding more people that have less connection with church than we've ever had. I think in the history of this nation, we have less churched people, a higher percentage of unchurched than we've ever had. And they are hungering. They are hungering for something, and they've heard about churches, and they have a preconception of us that has closed their minds to us. So we don't want to offer them church, we want to offer them Christ. Because they're searching for, and they need that, and they want that. God will grow their faith. God will help us connect. God will make all of those things come to fruition and grow things. We just need to be ready for it. Now, there's a warning. You see, this time of year is another interesting phenomenon in Johnstown and other communities like it. Traveling becomes hectic. Say they take these huge trucks, they drive out in the fields, they fill them up with corn or beets or whatever they're harvesting, and then they drive through the mud, and then they pull up on the highway, and they fling mud from here to Kansas. And they get stopped at traffic lights, and you're stuck behind them. It's not as bad as when you're stuck behind the manure trucks, but it is an impediment. It disrupts our lives. We need to recognize that in church too. Things that we like, things that are comfortable, things that are a certain way, and we just like them like that. Sometimes we have to say, yes, but this must adapt to Christ's call and to Christ's people. What would that mean? I don't know. But disruption is a part of our journey as Christians. Just like pulling up behind the beet truck and all of a sudden it dies. And you're stuck at the light there as it cycles about 6 or 7 times. And then finally it gets going again. So harvest time. How many of you are ready to go out and drive a beet truck? You haul the beets out to the beet dump and you dump them. It's not a real dump. It's a place where you pile them up so they can haul them to the beet processing plant in a steady stream that'll last months. But when the harvest time comes, you've got to harvest, and you've got to harvest now. And haul them to a storage facility, and that's called a beet dump. And the truckers are trucking, and the trucks are moving, and everything's happening mighty, mighty fast. The harvest is due. The crops are plentiful, but the laborers are few, and the laborers are us. You ready to be a laborer? Most of us would rather be the executives, but that's not the choice. Laborers for Christ. God has been good to us. Think about it. Think about the nice clothes we're wearing, the cars we're driving, the homes that we live in, and we have running water, electricity, computers on our wrists now. Some of us have computers embedded. It's getting to be quite an amazing world, and medical technology and health. And crops from all around the world. I've heard that there's a worry that pistachios might be a problem. I guess Iran is a huge pistachio exporter. Anybody worried about pistachio shortage? It's bothered me some. Let's not take any of God's harvest for granted. Let's not take any of our prosperity for granted. Let's be aware of how we apply ourselves, where we apply ourselves. And let us have God lead us. And let's go drive beet truck. What do you say? Amen.